south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, how about we get to a few emails, some which are bits and pieces, slightly incomplete or incoherent, but nevertheless amusing. How about some mating and dating emails first? People seem to love that. This is from Hank. He says, John, Hank here with some dating advice from a pro. Or I should say I'm a pro in getting rejected by women. I must have been rejected 5,000 times by women in my life. I'm just an average guy, not a stalker, a gaper, a predator. It's just that I'm a solid 5 on a 10 scale. And women, especially on those dating sites, go for the top 10%, and I'm right in the middle. That said, here's my 2 cents. From a 40-something guy from New York who is now a permanent expat living in Latin America for the past year and a half. First, let me tell you what it's like to be a 40-something guy dating up in the States. He says, if you're a dude in New York, here's the scale of where you should find your compatible dating match. If you happen to be an 8, 9, or 10, tall, handsome, nice hair, financially successful, super funny, clever guy, or playing a rock band, you can take your pick of the ladies. As many as you want until you drop dead or drop down that 10 scale. So if you're an 8, 9, or 10, tall, handsome, nice hair, financially successful, and all that, you've won the dating and mating lottery. You're that 10% on the Tinder and Cupid sites that 95% of the girls on those sites hit on. You've heard the stats, right? 10% of the guys on those sites get 90% of the hits, while the other 90% of guys don't get dick, like yours truly. Now, if you happen to be in the U.S. and in the mating and dating game, and you are a 5, 6, or 7, like yours truly, guy with average height, not handsome, okay hair, played sports but not a standout, decent but boring job, and when you tell jokes at parties, more people laugh at you than with you, well then, you could safely match with American women from 4s up to 6.5s. But don't set your sights any higher than a 6.5 or you'll end up being the last option on her list. You'll be the default guy and get walked on. You'll never get the respect you deserve. Which brings us to American guys who've lost the looks lottery. Guys who are 1s, 2s, 3s, and 4s. Short guys, unkempt, fat, bald, poor, slow-witted, bad drunks, bad teeth. Nerds living at home who haven't cashed in on their software projects yet. Well, sorry to say you're pretty much out of the dating game completely. It's porn, hookers, Comic-Con, dress-up, and World of Warfare, and living in mom's basement for you. So guys, if you are in the USA, figure out where you fit in on that scale and don't aim out of your league or you'll miss out on girls that will be happy to be with you and respect you too. Problem is, they probably won't be pretty or sexy. Of course, that's no consolation for guys who are in the last group, the ones who have completely lost the looks, culture, or hygiene lottery. Those sorry guys that are 1s, 2s, 3s, and 4s. But Johnny, recall that I've been living in Latin America for the last year and a half. And in the years before I came down, I listened to your show religiously. I heard you talk over and over about the gringo advantage. Sometimes I even believed you. I believed it wasn't hyperbole. Though other times I thought, Johnny's gotta say that. It ups the ratings. People wanna think there's a pot of gold at the other end of the rainbow. Especially guys who've been perpetual losers in the mating and dating game. They want to hear there's hope out there. The hope of a gringo advantage will get the losers to come to his seminar. It's like religion. The afterlife's got to be better than the here and now. Or no one would bother to go to that snooze fest called church. Did he get that right? Anyway, then he finishes off by saying, I want to apologize, Johnny, for doubting you. I found it really is true. If you're in Latin America, you can add 2 or 3 points to your score. That means you could act accordingly and refer back to the previous list. But remember, don't sell yourself short. Do add those few points and then go for it. However, if you're the kind of guy who does not have much of an adventurous spirit and never leaves the U.S., you'll never know if it's true. You might want to believe it, but if you stay in Cleveland or Boulder or Milwaukee, whatever, you've been assigned a number by luck or unluck of the draw that will forever determine your mating and dating fate. According to the 10 scale, which can be pretty cruel. All right, me Johnny here. Remember I said this group of emails is kind of disjointed, so bear with me here. All right, now a related email comes from Tim in Rockford, Illinois. He says, Dear Jay, I learned to stop chasing very attractive girls early in life because they tend to be narcissistic and are a bit disconnected with reality. Most are just an absolute snore fest when it comes to conversation, too. Their beauty and sexiness may open doors, and they look nice at parties. But, he says, I found that once you start looking for traits you really like and want in a person, you'll be surprised who has them and how a girl you might have thought considered less than hot turns out to be a 10 in personality. And that can steal a man's heart in a way that looks, which will always fade, can never do. That's my trouble with your thesis, Johnny, about moving to Latin America to find the right girl. He says, for me, the big hole in that argument is that I don't know Spanish. I'm 52 and I know you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I've tried, believe me, with the crypto stuff, and still, I just don't get it. And if I can't get that crypto stuff by studying it 5 or 10 hours, like you and many others say is enough to get a good handle on it and learn the ins and outs, then I'll never learn Spanish, since learning a language well or even halfway decent takes thousands of hours. So, Johnny, even if a gringo in Latin America ends up with a Latina who's a 9 or a 10, a guy who previously up in the States only had luck with 4s, 5s, and 6s. That might give him a huge ego boost and bragging rights for a limited period of time, but after the blush is off the rose, in the long run, it's all about conversation. Then what? Do you forever have your smartphone translators do the talking? That's not very intimate. Sounds like hard work. Signed, Tim, Rockford, Illinois. Tim, you're forgetting something. You're forgetting that the number one way to learn Spanish, the very best way to learn Spanish, is to have a Latin American boyfriend or girlfriend who does not speak English or knows very little English, especially if you have a live-in Spanish-speaking boyfriend or girlfriend. Sure, in the first couple of months, it'll be trial by fire. It'll be very frustrating. But you've heard of immersion programs, right? That's where tens of thousands of gringos and expats pay good money to live with a completely Spanish-speaking family for weeks at a time. It certainly is trial by fire because they won't speak English to you. They can't. Those families don't speak English. I tried it myself. I didn't last 2 weeks. Not because of the language thing. It's I just couldn't take the food. Because, you know, you're accepted as part of the family and you got to eat with the family. They've got different hygiene standards. And most often you'll have to share the one bathroom in the home with everyone too, which to me is the deal breaker. Especially since in middle and lower middle class Latino families, they're noted for putting used toilet paper in the garbage can next to the toilet and not flushing the toilet. In fact, I can always tell when visiting a bathroom in Latin America if the last person in is from a middle or lower middle class family because they often will not flush the toilet. I know, disgusting you're thinking. Well, it's not because they don't want to. It's just that in their own home, they've got an intermittent water problem. You heard me talk about that before. Turns out in pretty much all of Latin America, anyone who's on a municipal water supply and doesn't have a cistern on top of the roof, you know, one of those big tanks, there'll only be water pressure for a certain amount of hours a day. 8, 10, 12 hours in some districts. Remember, we're talking about middle and lower middle class Latino neighborhoods now. There will only be municipal water pressure every other day. So that means on the days where you don't have water, when you flush, nothing happens. Disgusting, right? Now, to overcome that, especially when guests are over, there'll be a bucket full of water sitting in the bathroom next to the toilet. That would be the reserve water to pour into the tank of the toilet on those days or hours where there's no water pressure. That will give you an extra flush. Now, I ask you, have you ever had to do that in the States? Probably never. But I can tell you down here in Latin America, I've done it 100 times. Not in my own home or residence, though, or pretty much anywhere where gringos and expats live, because generally, it's been in a gated, guarded community or residential tower that has its own well. And when you've got your own well, you've got water 24/7. What I'm talking about now is if you're on a municipal water supply. Like, for example, if you're renting an apartment or a house in a middle-class neighborhood. Now, middle-class Latin neighborhoods are always on a municipal water supply. You could tell everyone's on a municipal water supply because they've got all those big tanks or tinacos. Those cisterns on top of roofs. Those are the families that are prepared for those daily drops in water pressure. Now, if you have one of those big black cisterns or tinacos on your roof, you will have water mostly 24/7, or it'll appear so. That's why homeowners shell out for those things and the auxiliary pump. That means you can flush your toilet anytime you want. Good deal, huh? Now, also remember, if you see those tinacos on a roof, you know it's municipal water, and you know it's not on 24/7. You know water pressure is inconsistent, maybe 8 hours a day or maybe every other day. Do consider that if you're thinking about buying a place there. So here's the deal. Suppose your water is on, let's say, 12 hours a day. That means the other 12 hours, when you open up the tap, nothing comes out. Not good, huh? However, that 12 hours when there is water pressure, you don't have the tap on all the time. Maybe only 5 minutes out of every hour. When you're washing clothes or dishes, flushing the toilet, whatever. So you buy one of those tinacos or cisterns, put it up on the roof, and when you do have water pressure, that thing's filling itself up automatically. Then, when you don't have water pressure, there's a sensor that automatically lets that water flow back into the pipeline from that reservoir of water in your cistern. A pump kicks in and you've got water pressure again, even when there's no municipal pressure in the line, which gives the person living in that home the impression that there's water 24/7. So the trick is to have a cistern and a pump. That costs maybe $500 or so. Which is why so many lower middle class homes and neighborhoods don't have cisterns on the roof. It's about the extra cost in the installation, so they just put up with the fact they've got 8 hours of water, 10 or 12, or every other day. So with no cistern, that means they fill up a couple of buckets of water and have them around the kitchen and toilet. That means they've learned not to flush the toilet unless there's water pressure. That's why you can always tell if you walk into a bathroom. If the last guy in was from a lower middle class neighborhood. Not a pretty sight. I know, as sickening as that sounds, that's the fact of life here. Oh, and about those cisterns, you know, lots of gringos and expats will live in a neighborhood that's got municipal water. You'll have a cistern, you'll have water 24/7, no problem. The trick is, though, to have a big enough cistern. A lot of people buy cisterns that are too small or just adequate at the time it's installed when they first build their house, let's say. Could be you've got a 250-gallon cistern that's perfectly fine for two people living in the home. Well, as the family grows bigger or more people move in, or as the city or town grows and there's more strain on that municipal water system, what once was adequate as far as cistern size is no longer the case. The easy remedy is just to get a bigger one. But again, they cost. And, you know, Latin Americans aren't big on details, so often a growing family, let's say, gets to the limit of their cistern and they won't replace it. They'll just tolerate an hour or two a day without water. I've seen that happen too. They can't or maybe don't have the money to dish out the extra $500 to $800 to get a bigger cistern. So anyway, maybe too much detail there, but those are things you should know if you're coming here to live in Latin America, especially if you're considering buying a place or taking out a long-term lease. Oh, and by the way, to repeat, a gringo gone native might live in a lower middle-class area where the rents are, let's say, $100 or $150 a month. However, that's usually a guarantee he will not have water 24/7. And probably no cistern either, so you know what that means. Oh, and if you're visiting a gringo who's living in a lower middle class neighborhood, a gringo gone native, be prepared to be disgusted about a lot of things. The bathroom, the sewer smells as you're walking through the neighborhood, and an army of cucarachas, because in those lower middle class neighborhoods, the litter problem and the lack of consistent garbage pickup are just the facts of a lower middle class Latin American life. However, do note that once you get out of the city and into the pueblos, the lower middle class neighborhoods on the boonies, things are often very different and those areas can be very clean and yards nicely groomed. In Latin America, anyway, there's something different about poor people living in the city and poor people living in the boonies. They seem to have completely different standards. I've personally seen and visited poor folks living in the boonies who have impeccable yards and houses. However, the poor barrios in the city, forget about it. What's up with that? It's one of life's mysteries, I guess. Now, while I'm at it, let me tell you another reason why I only lasted less than 2 weeks in that immersion family. It was in a kind of lower middle class home. The thing is, the mother and father didn't seem to work. Seems to me they made almost all their money from gringos and expats doing the immersion thing. It was pretty damn good money, too. $200 a week for each gringo. So if you had a gringo for a month, $800 a month, three times the minimum wage. For basically doing nothing. Anyway, it was one of those houses that didn't have water 24/7, so there'd often be pee in the toilet. Though they had that mandatory bucket of water in the bathroom in case there was no water pressure. That way, if you had to do number two, you could get a flush. By the way, I forgot to tell you that. That mandatory bucket of water is for that number two extra flush. In normal circumstances, when you're on municipal water and there's no cistern and you only have 8 or 12 hours of water a day, you'll often see pee that's been sitting there a while, but you'll not see number two, or at least hopefully not. That's what that extra bucket of water sitting in the bathroom is for. You pull the tank top off the toilet, pour that in, and you get an extra flush. So it's not as gross as you think. But still, imagine a gringo or expat like you or me coming down to Latin America. You're only in the country, let's say, 2 weeks. You're signed up with an immersion family. On day one, you're seeing pee in the toilet. No one's flushing. But no one gives you a heads up about it either. You're on your own because no one's speaking English, remember? That's part of being in an immersion family. Plus, you know, there's that obligatory bucket in the bathroom where you put the used toilet paper. Isn't that nice? Imagine what's going through your mind when you use the bathroom for the first time and you see that thing. It's not just seeing it, it's smelling it too. Now, remember, if there's no water in the toilet, there's no water in the sink, so people are not washing up like they should. In the end, that's why I left, thinking about the lack of hygiene in the kitchen. By the way, I remember a long time ago talking to a Latina exchange student who returned to Latin America after graduating from University of Wisconsin-Madison on a scholarship. What a culture shock, Johnny, she said, going to the United States for the first time. I can't believe how everyone in Madison, Wisconsin follows the rules. And the cops fine you if you don't. The other big shock, she said, is that people put toilet paper in the toilet. Yep, in her case, she was a lower middle class Latina who was top in her class in high school, so she got a scholarship. Of course, after 4 years of living on campus up in the United States, she's all trained up with first world mannerisms and first world defects, too. Some would say she's been contaminated by her first world experiences. I didn't know her before she went to the States, but I definitely think she's not going to go back to the boonies from whence she came. I can tell you this, though, she won't go back to the barrio where they don't flush the toilet and the poop paper goes in a bucket next to the toilet. By the way, it's a funny thing. They don't call it toilet paper here in Latin America. They don't say papel de inodoro, inodoro's toilet. They say papel de baño. They call it bathroom paper. Because I guess if you called it toilet paper like they do everywhere else in the world, you'd sort of be obligated to put it in the toilet, wouldn't you? However, by calling it bathroom paper, that expands your options considerably. All right, moving on. Here's an email from Derek. He says, Johnny, is it really true that people who start businesses, that is gringos and expats, who start businesses in Latin America have a huge leg up over the locals? He says, I'm kind of a small-time entrepreneur myself. I've started 3 or 4 businesses. All of them have either failed or just broke even. By the way, he's from Clearwater, Florida. He says, I realize when you look at YouTubes and TED Talks of millionaires and billionaires, they always say they failed a few times. Seems none of them had success on the first or second try. I get that. So I'm wondering if what you say is really true about Latin America, because I do speak pretty decent Spanish. I have no objections to going to Latin America to live forever if I could start a business that might actually kick ass. So tell me, Johnny, is it really true? Do we really have that gringo advantage in business? I'm hoping that not only you'll say yes, but that it's a big advantage. Because, you see, I'm a little bit depressed, and I need a big advantage. A little one won't work for me. Signed, longtime listener Derek, Clearwater, Florida. Well, thanks for that, Derek. Question for you. Is the water really that clear in Clearwater? Sounds to me, from what you say, it's kind of murky sometimes. Anyway, I can say, as a guy who's been involved in many businesses here in Latin America, most all of them having been successes in their own way, or at least didn't lose any money, except in those forced lockdowns, assholes. Anyway, this, coming from a guy who never really was good at making money in real estate. I've had lots of it in my day, but to tell you the truth, if I added it all up, the profits and losses, and all the extra grunt work and remodeling I put in myself, for me, I'd say investing in real estate was a losing proposition. However, it's also true if you're going to buy a place and live in it yourself long term. You're not going to try to rent it or Airbnb it. That's different. I think it's definitely a good idea to own the place you're going to live in here in Latin America for lots of good reasons. The climate's great. You've got 3 or 4 growing seasons, so you can have a fantastic garden. The property taxes are minuscule compared to those up in the States. The sun's almost always shining, so solar opportunities are fantastic. And during the rainy season anyway, you've got way too much water. And the labor to get anything done, like repairs or building or remodeling, is beyond cheap compared to what you're used to. Now, all of that, of course, should be to your great advantage if you're using a property as a rental property or flipping properties, whatever. And you're right. But for me, it just hasn't worked out that well. I guess, in a way, being an engineer in the past life, I'm just too picky about my properties. In other words, I always want to maintain them and keep them in really good condition, great condition. And renters don't. They have just the opposite attitude. They don't give a shit. Because you know how most people take care of things when they don't own them. Of course, that doesn't mean those of you who are used to being landlords won't be able to handle it. But for me, it's just stress. It's not my thing. However, the question is, Derek's question, that is your Gringo Advantage in business really as good as I've been telling you all these years? Well, let me put it this way. The easiest way to be successful in any business, anywhere in the world, is number one, show up early. Number two, look and smell nice. Number three, be organized. Number four, have good manners. Number five, follow up with your clients. Number six, know the product you're selling inside out. Number seven, deliver on your promises. And number eight, there's probably a few more, but let's stop at number eight. Have change on hand. Don't laugh. I can't tell you how many dozens and dozens of times I've walked into a Latin American business. I pull out a 10, a 20, a 50, and a local funny money to buy something, and they don't have change. So what do? Well, they send someone out the door for 5 minutes or so searching for change by hitting up some other Latin American business owner across the street or around the corner, which really makes you wonder, what's going to happen when everything goes digital, when everyone has to get on some kind of government CBDC, Central Bank Digital Currency? You know it's going to happen up in the first world. But down here in Latin America, I don't know how the hell they're going to do it, which is a good thing. Another reason to have your plan B here in Latin America. Anyway, Derek, I just mentioned 8 things that are key to being successful in business anywhere. Just basic stuff, the common sense rules of business. But the truth of the matter is pretty dim. Here in Latin America, Latino businessmen get about 2 of those 8 things right. And that is one of the reasons why they call it the third world. Now, you have to admit, all those 8 things we just discussed are not rocket science. Then again, rocket science ain't what it used to be either. So, by all means, drop that cliche and start using brain surgery. In lieu of saying something like it's not rocket science, it's safer to say it's not brain surgery. That phrase will still be potent for a long, long time. Derek, if you come down here and start a business and get that easy stuff right, you will leave other Latino businesses in the dust. Oh, and I forgot one of the main things Latinos just don't get. Yet gringos and expats get it pretty much every time. Namely, you must have the product and or the inventory close by or on hand. Don't you hate, for example, going into a grocery store, let's say, and buying something you're used to buying and it's not there? Or going to a restaurant, ordering something from the menu, the waiter comes back in 10 minutes and says, sorry, we don't have that. Make another selection, please. And since this is Latin America, chances are when you make that second selection, they've been out of that for a couple of days too. That exact thing happened to me about 2 days ago. Very nice high-end restaurant where 2 consecutive things on the main menu that I ordered were not available. Duh. Oh, and do, for example, if you have an actual store or brick-and-mortar business, make sure you've got adequate lighting. You don't have some burnt-out bulbs or flickering lights. Another common trademark of a long-standing Latin American business. And how about making sure the bathrooms, the shelves, and the windows are clean and not powdered with a layer of old dust and cobwebs? All very easy and basic stuff, right? Not brain surgery. You get it. Enough said about that. All right, now an email from Lois in Lansing, Michigan. She's writing in defense of American gringas who go on those Tinder and Cupid hookup sites. She says, Johnny, I'm 32 years old, have no kids, and in the looks department, I'm not exaggerating, I'm a 9 pushing a 10. People have told me that all my life. That means I don't need to use filters when I go on those dating sites. She says, I'm naturally curvy and bike a lot, so I'm in great cardio shape too, with no fix-me-up surgeries, not yet. He says, Johnny, of course, because of my looks, when I go on those dating sites, I get hundreds of hits from guys a day. And it's crazy on those dating sites. Lots of pervs out there asking for nude photos and lots of guys sending dick pics, even offering to buy me cars and airline tickets and stuff. I know half of all that's BS. And half of them are liars and cheaters. So you might wonder, why do I bother to go on those sites? Why can't I meet a nice guy at Walmart or Starbucks or church? I ask myself that a lot. Johnny, it's just for the laughs and amusement in my boring life, I guess, because I'm kind of a loner and I don't go to discos or bars or Starbucks. I work at home and don't much follow the trend. I mean, Johnny, in the end, since I work at home, I don't meet eligible dating material guys in person. Not much. And I know that because I'm smart and good-looking, guys are often afraid to approach me. My story is I had a long-distance relationship with a guy for a couple of years. We broke up about 6 months ago just because it's long distance. We'd only see each other one weekend a month. Not quite adequate for any kind of future. Plus, he was kind of an introvert, so there wasn't much spark there. In any event, I've been on those Cupid and Tinder sites in the USA for about 3 months and still have not actually physically dated anyone through it yet, though I came close 3 times. You're wondering why not, correct? Well, here's how it usually goes. I want a real unwoke man, not a media coward, so I guess I'm way too picky. What's that mean? Well, I won't give a woke guy or a socialist or a pronoun-obsessed dude the time of day. In other words, I don't date guys or text back with men who have guy purses, piercings, rasta curls, or hair buns. I figure they're trying too hard to make some kind of look-at-me statement to the world. I don't need that. And when a guy asks me to go out to eat, and I tell him I'm whole foods, mostly plant-based, and I'd prefer to eat at a place that has lots of salads and vegetable options, along with their meat entrees, rather than just steak, potatoes, and pastas and sauce, that's when the pregnant pause comes. It seems non-woke guys always are the guys who love Texas Roadhouse, Outback Steakhouse, and the Olive Garden. She says, I've even had a couple of good prospects go berserk on me with some tirade about how I must be a lefty liberal Democrat just because I want whole foods. All that without even going on a date. We're still texting. Just because I'm a vegan, guys think I have a lefty political agenda. When in fact, I'm a libertarian and all I'm interested in is eating the most natural foods so I can remain healthy and live longer. Aside from that, I do have a plan B and I'm looking at El Salvador as my destination of choice. I have some crypto and I'm self-sufficient. By the way, I know you are right about Latin American macho men and will stay away from them. I'll probably end up with an IT or crypto nerd. The ones I've met online up in Michigan are always quirky and good conversationalists, though mostly living in mom's basement. I understand there are a lot of interesting crypto types piling into El Salvador right now, so I'm hoping for the best. Signed, Lois the Loner from Lansing, Michigan. P.S. Johnny, put me on the list for your next seminar in El Salvador. I'll be there. Only if you read this on your show, I won't cop to the name Lois if I come to your seminar. All right, Lois, it's a deal. If you come to the seminar, we'll keep you anonymous.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.